This is an ABC podcast.
What's the go with these teal independents? What does that even mean? Because they've got some Liberal MPs really worried about their future in politics. Hey, it's Dave Marchese, back on Hack after resting those vocal cords for a few days. And yeah, we're going to be speaking to some people in these electorates where there are teal candidates. Also coming up, you'll hear some crazy stories from a filmmaker behind some of those epic nature docos we all love. But first...
How dare they? How dare they tell a woman what she can do and cannot do with her own body?
On Triple J.
How dare they?
You might have been seeing heaps on your social feeds about a huge controversy that's blown up in the US over abortion. The US Supreme Court is expected to make a decision this year which will decide whether millions of American women lose the legal right to abortion. And a leaked draft document that's been made public shows that that could be about to happen. A landmark court decision that was made way back in the 1970s that legalised abortion could be about to be overturned. Look, even if you have been following this in the news, it still is really confusing. So what's it all about? How did we get here? Chantelle Alcouri explains.
The political landscape rumbling loudly tonight after the explosive leak of a draft Supreme Court opinion overturning Roe versus Wade, the landmark decision that established the constitutional right to abortions in this country.
If you're a young person who wants to access abortion and living in the United States, you're probably feeling pretty stressed out right now. That's because a leaked US Supreme Court document suggests the most senior panel of judges in the country might be about to overturn the ruling that made abortion legal almost 50 years ago.
The Supreme Court today ruled that abortion is completely a private matter to be decided by mother and doctor in the first 3 months of pregnancy.
The 1973 Roe v. Wade decision protects a woman's right to choose to have an abortion during the first trimester of pregnancy.
We are not here to advocate abortion. We do not ask this court to rule that abortion is good. We are here to advocate that the decision as to whether or not a particular woman will continue to carry or will terminate a pregnancy is a decision that should be made by that individual.
It was a huge deal, and it changed the lives of millions of people. Abortion went from being a dangerous and sometimes deadly illegal procedure to being recognised as essential healthcare. But ever since, there's been pushback, starting in the 70s.
You know, when you talk about the woman's right, you're talking about one-third of the rights involved. The mother, the father, and the child.
And going into the 90s.
For the past 23 years, it's been an annual event as anti-abortionists converge on Washington to protest a law they claim is wrong.
Since Roe versus Wade, there has not been such an intensive, rapid-fire assault on access to abortion and on our right to choose.
Nearly one in four women in the US are expected to have an abortion. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, abortion wouldn't become legal for everyone in the US, but more than half of the US states already have anti-abortion laws that would kick in as soon as the decision is reversed, including states like Oklahoma, where performing or attempting to perform abortions would become illegal, with the exception of saving the life of the pregnant person. It means you could face a max of 10 years in prison, or a fine of $100,000, or both. And if the Supreme Court overturns the Roe decision, it means thousands of Americans may be forced to go elsewhere to access it or miss out entirely. Leaking a draft decision of the Supreme Court is a really big deal.
It's stunning on so many levels.
It's super rare, and this is the most substantial leak in recent history on a really polarising issue.
But to have it come out this way, but it looks like it's about to sail through.
These kinds of drafts have never been released before a decision has been made public. This is being described as unprecedented, and some people are even calling it an unforgivable sin.
I am angry because of who will pay the price for this.
While the draft is not final and still subject to change, both pro-choice and pro-life demonstrations have erupted across the US. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court has confirmed the leaked, highly confidential document is legit, and now they're investigating how it got into the hands of the media.
I have seen the world where abortion is illegal.
Is it the one-inch tissue that we are concerned about, or is it the dead woman on the motel floor.
So say it with me. We are not going back.
On Triple Jack.
Chantel Alcouri there with Claudia Long producing that story, and lots of thoughts coming through on this one. Somebody says, just when you think the US couldn't get any more depraved. Another person says abortion should be illegal. And another person says this is in the US, not Australia. What is the relevance to us? Well, let's talk a bit more about that, what it means not only for the US, but for other people around the world watching on. We'll keep the conversation going with Prudence Flowers. She's a senior lecturer at Flinders University and has been following this really closely. Prudence, thank you very much for coming on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
You've been looking into this for ages, and you've been talking about what could happen if this legal decision, Roe versus Wade, is overturned in the US. We're being told this leaked document isn't the court's final decision, but does it look like it's going to happen?
It seems pretty likely, although obviously the leaking of the document is a political move. It's very unclear, though, whether it's been leaked by people who support overturning Roe v. Wade or by some of the liberal justices on the bench, because you can make arguments either way. But this is clearly an attempt to either sway the outcome, or it's been leaked with an eye on the midterm election. So it's a very political decision, and possibly a very passionate kind of ideologically motivated decision to leak this document. The reason it seems that this is likely to unfold is that there are six conservative justices on the US Supreme Court, and there are only three liberal justices on the US Supreme Court. And we know that this draft had the support of five of the justices. So unless one of those five are persuaded to support a sort of compromise position, it does seem quite likely that that Roe v. Wade is about to be overturned.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a different legal system to ours, and I don't want to get into all the complexities. It's, don't have enough time. But the way the US Supreme Court works, there are justices making these decisions, and some have conservative views, some are more progressive, right? That's the way it is.
Look, it's not meant to be that way. The Supreme Court is meant to be an impartial part of a system of government where there are checks and balances on power. So the Supreme Court, in the kind of the way that the Constitution envisages it, is a neutral arbiter of law. Justices are appointed. They are not meant to be beholden to kind of political ideas, and they're meant to have a lifetime appointment. They don't serve at the pleasure of any one president. But pretty much because of Roe v. Wade, what we have seen in the past 40 years is increasing partisanship and polarisation around the process of filling Supreme Court vacancies. So, yeah, it's now fair to say, look, there are six conservative Republican justices on the Supreme Court who have been appointed to overturn Roe v. Wade. And it's really not going very far to extrapolate that they were chosen because they're believed to overturn that decision.
We've got some comments coming through. Maddie says, I'm so lucky to have access to safe termination in Victoria, especially as I had completely no idea I was pregnant till it was almost too late. I'm so grateful. Marty in Toowoomba says, the hypocritical nature of these abortion laws is that most of these states that started this sad process also support the death penalty. The politics of fear and ignorance is growing. I'm wondering, Prudence, could this set a worrying precedent if it was to happen for other decisions that the Supreme Court in the US makes, like same-sex marriage decisions, for example?
Look, I 100% think that this is the case, and I've been making this argument for quite a long time. Opponents of abortion argue that Roe was decided incorrectly because it rests on the idea of a constitutional right to privacy, and they argue that because that's not a specific amendment, it's been interpreted, that it's not a real right. Well, most sexual and reproductive rights in the US rely on that right, the right to access contraception, the right to view pornography in your own home, the right to engage essentially in same-sex relations, so sodomy rights, same-sex marriage, interracial marriage. All of these are predicated on the right to privacy, the same right that Roe relies on. So this is actually mentioned in the draft. These kinds of things are brought up in the draft, but particularly same-sex marriage.
Somebody says, when will governments finally learn that banning things from being done safely and legally just drives them underground and makes everything worse? And another person, all abortions are saving the life of the woman. Abortion needs to be a global civil right for women. I'm talking to Dr. Prudence Flowers from Flinders University. Prudence, I'm wondering, there's a lot of people saying, oh, look, this is happening in the US, it's not in Australia, why are we talking about it? It's not directly impacting Australians. Why is it important, though, that we care about it here in Australia and we are watching on and keeping up to date with what's happening?
Look, I think, you know, there's often a joke that Australia is or is not the 51st US state. Obviously, our system is completely different and the right to safe access to abortion in Australia is not under threat. But the US anti-abortion movement is incredibly powerful at a global level, as is the US movement opposed to gay and lesbian rights and trans rights. You know, they have a global reach. And in particular, the kind of tactics and strategies that anti-abortionists in the US have developed have been demonstrated here. When New South Wales, when Queensland, when South Australia decriminalized abortion in the last 5 years, we saw kind of verbatim talking points and strategies move from the US to Australia and really direct links between anti-abortion groups here and anti-abortion groups in the US. And although, you know, Scott Morrison commented today that, you know, it's not going to affect abortion in Australia, it's not really relevant here, I would note that the Assistant Minister for Women in his government, Amanda Stoker, spoke to a Right to Life rally in Queensland over the last weekend. There are multiple prominent people in the LNP who are outspoken in their criticism of abortion and who did intervene in state decriminalisation debates. And then you have minor fringe parties like One Nation who have an actual pro-life platform opposing abortion being legal. And yes, these are a minor kind of candidates, but, you know, they have seats in the Senate, they have influence that's disproportionate to their reach. So I think we have good reason to be concerned that if Roe is toppled, it will embolden people who are opposed to safe legal abortion.
Well, like you say, yeah, abortion is politicised a lot, especially in the US, but here in Australia too. We know there are a lot of politicians that have a stand on the issue. They've made those public. What about the community, though? Is there any clear idea of how Americans feel about this in society?
Oh, I mean, this is the thing that's pretty sad. You know, there's about 80% public support for abortion in all or most circumstances. 60% of Americans support the actual Roe decision. And this is from polling last year. You know, as the clip at the beginning said, 1 in 4 women will access an abortion. It's a routine element of people's sexual and reproductive health lives. And it's not necessarily as controversial amongst Americans as politicians make it out to be. But it serves this really important political purpose for the Republican Party. And since 1980, they've really been using it as a drumbeat to attract a specific group of voters, basically conservative Christian voters. And, you know, if Roe is overturned, they will be able to point to that and say that they have delivered on a promise that they have been making for over 40 years. And I guarantee that they will seek to go further than just returning abortion to the states. You know, we already know that Republican lawmakers met in the last few days to talk about the idea of a national law that would ban abortion after 6 weeks. So their goal is not to let individual states allow abortion. The goal of anti-abortionists in the US is to ban abortion. So if Roe falls, this won't be the end of the agitation around abortion. It will be a kind of beginning for even more intrusive and detrimental legislation being pursued.
All right, Dr. Prudence Flowers from Flinders University, thank you for coming on and explaining all of that to us.
Thanks for having me.
On the text line, somebody says, I wonder how many of the justices are men making a decision on what a woman can or can't do with their body. Another person, women should be allowed to choose about their bodies and men should be able to decide if they want to be part of it, whether the child is kept or not.
Hack!
Ooh, this extraordinary creature is half blind, half deaf, it's a sloth.
On Triple J.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but when I'm feeling heaps overwhelmed with the news, with the world, one of my favourite things to do is kick back, watch one of those epic nature docos, you know, the Attenborough ones that really put everything into perspective. They remind you, hey, we're just a tiny part of something really huge and incredible. And I'm often thinking, how amazing would it be to be part of one of those films? Like, especially the people filming it, they must see some crazy stuff, things that don't even make it onto the screen. One of those people is Alex Vale. He's a wildlife cinematographer. He's worked with Sir David Attenborough on a heap of stuff. You might have seen things like Frozen Planet 2. He worked on that. And a new one that's out now called A Perfect Planet. Alex is with me now. G'day, Alex. Thanks so much for coming on Hack.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Dave. Really, really good to be here. I listen to Triple J a lot, so it's pretty special to be on it.
Oh, nice. We all watch the stuff that you're producing all the time. I know that, you know, a lot of Triple J listeners will be so familiar with your work. You've travelled around the world seeing the most extraordinary parts of nature, Alex. What's the most memorable thing you've seen?
Oh, I've been very lucky to see, quite a few places, but I think probably the most special place I've ever been was a little spot on the Antarctic Peninsula called Sierva Cove, where we were filming gentoo penguins sort of sadly being munched on by leopard seals, and it's just the most incredible location, so that's got to be right up there.
Yeah, I imagine you're seeing some beautiful scenery when you're out and about, but you'd be getting into some really tricky situations as well, because you're dealing with wildlife, and wildlife that probably hasn't come into contact with humans a lot or at all. How dangerous is it doing your job filming nature so closely in these really remote places?
I actually just recently got off a shoot where it was actually the weather that was probably the slightly scary bit. We were on a ship out in the middle of the Arctic Ocean, heading for Greenland, and we ran into a pretty massive storm, actually. There were winds over 70 knots. It was like a small cyclone, 12-metre waves. The ship took on a heap of water. There were alarms going off. We had to get dressed and get ready in the middle of the night. That was a fairly hairy experience. I've been in the water with whales a couple of times, filming them. That is like such a magical experience, but also you have to have a lot of care and respect for these whales, because even though they're generally, you know, very gentle and try, you know, not touch you, they're just so big. Like, I was filming southern right whales that weigh about 60 tons, and if one of them just like bumps you, it's like a truck running into you. So you've definitely got to take a bit of care, but so far so good for me.
As I mentioned earlier, you've been lucky enough to work with one of the world's living legends, right? Sir David Attenborough. He's loved across the globe. He's actually been on Hack before. We've interviewed him, and which is, you know, was phenomenal at the time. What's he like to work with as a person?
He's just everything that I hoped he would be. He just cares so genuinely about what he's talking about. And although he gets, you know, presented with a script, he very much looks through it and, you know, crosses out bits he doesn't like or thinks could be changed. And, you know, he's asking scientists about, you know, is there a better way I could say this, or is this true? So, yeah, he was everything I'd hoped he'd be. And I felt very lucky to get to spend a few days with him, even have a sandwich with him.
Yeah, what's the go with the sandwich? I've read about that.
I don't know. I think it was just one of the more surreal moments of my life. Was sitting down at a picnic table next to Sir David with a few other people, and just having lunch, having a sandwich, as you do. And, even Sir David eats sandwiches, apparently.
I was imagining they were wheeling something out with one of those silver domes over at some caviar or something. It's good to know he's just getting into the sangers like the rest of us. So we've got this new doco, A Perfect Planet, it's called. What's this one about?
A Perfect Planet is about how the Earth's system, so like weather, volcanoes, the ocean's currents, how they have made this perfect environment for life on our planet, and how animals are perfectly adapted to all of these forces that we have on our planet. And I do appreciate that the title, A Perfect Planet, is maybe not the most timely at the moment, because unfortunately our planet at the moment is far from perfect. But I think what it's trying to celebrate is that we have this amazing gem of a planet for life to thrive on, and just showing us how animals are making use of it.
Alex, it's been so interesting having a chat with you. Your work helps us all understand the world we live in, and we're really thankful for that. So thank you very much for coming on Hack.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
Hack
on Triple J.
Yeah, and we can tell you that Alex's latest doco, A Perfect Planet, is out now, so you can go check it out. A few texts on the text line. Someone says, my partner got fired from his job at the zoo for asking a colleague if they'd have sex with David Attenborough. I would. Okay.
Hack. A vote for a so-called independent here in Coogee is a vote for a hung parliament.
On Triple J.
Okay, so we're smack in the middle of the election campaign. We've got another couple of weeks to go, and we've spoken a bit on Hack already about independents. And you might have heard about these teal candidates, the teal independents. They're the ones going after Liberal voters in electorates that were once considered safe, but now not so much. And there's a handful of these independents running against really high-profile Liberal MPs. One of these seats that the Coalition's watching carefully is in Melbourne's Bayside suburbs. Joe Lauder's been out and about getting an idea of what people there think.
Are you voting in this election, in this electorate?
It'll be my first time voting, so yeah, I will be.
Okay, cool. How are you feeling about that?
I'm excited. I don't know a lot about everything, but my mum's very into it, so yeah.
What would be the issues that would sway your vote, or what are you interested in?
I'm just very interested in about Australia and the economy and just the environment, really, and just how we're going to maintain it for the future.
Yeah, Zoe Daniels. Yeah, go Zoe.
Why is that?
I just like what she stands for. She's like a feminist and into climate change, and it seems like a lot of change that we need, so...
Good morning.
We're going to bombard you
right here. I'd love to. I'm so sorry. Good luck.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Zoe Daniel is a former ABC foreign correspondent who's now running as an independent candidate against government MP Tim Wilson in the seat of Goldstein. This electorate covers the Bayside suburbs in Melbourne's southeast and the Bentley train station, where I've met up with her campaign.
Very much blue ribbon Liberal seat, so... It's existed since, I think, 1980 as a result of a redistribution. It used to be called Balaclava and was a much bigger geographic area, but very much blue ribbon Liberal and has always been a Liberal seat.
And what made you decide to run as an independent in this seat?
So I never would have been a politician. I certainly didn't aspire to being a politician or running for either of the major parties because I'm a lifelong swinging voter. But I was asked by a community organisation called the Voices of Goldstein to run as an independent. And it occurred to me as I thought about it over the period of a couple of months that their reasons for wanting an independent, and those were better climate action, equality for women, integrity and a prosperous future based on really good climate policy, were very much in line with my priorities as well.
I have never in my life worked on a political campaign. To be totally honest, there's never been a campaign that I have felt really reflects my priorities. I've never really felt that I've gelled with either of the major parties.
Ellie's a 21-year-old politics student who's volunteering with Zoe Daniels' campaign, and she reckons a lot of young voters are moving away from both major parties.
The major party should take away from this election cycle that they need to do more to take on the concerns of young people and to actively represent the interests of young people. And if they don't, this kind of cycle of moving away from the major parties is only going to continue.
Zoe Daniel is part of a movement in a bunch of electorates where independent candidates are trying to win in traditionally Liberal seats. Former Olympian Sally Steggall managed to do it at the last election when she beat Tony Abbott, who'd been the local member for ages. These candidates are independent, but they have a similar platform and are pushing the same couple of issues, that is, stronger climate change action, integrity and a federal anti-corruption body, and gender equality. They're also getting financial support from a group that's called Climate 200.
What I see is a whole bunch of people who are seeking to feed on distrust in politics and take advantage of cynicism by deceiving the community that they can be so-called independents and not actually stand up for what's in the national interest.
That's the current member for Goldstein, Tim Wilson. There's a similar campaign happening in the nearby Melbourne seat of Kooyong against the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg. He's being challenged by Monique Ryan, who is the head of neurology at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne until she decided to run. They're often called the teal independents for the colour of the shirts that they and their volunteers wear, but the government likes to call them fake independents.
Well, many of the so-called teal independents have formerly been members of the Labor Party. They refuse to disclose to the communities whose votes they seek how or who they're going to support to form government. What they actually want to do is sneak a Labor government into power through electorates which traditionally would not ever tolerate that.
But Zoe Daniel doesn't see it that way.
It's just a construct by people who are trying to stop people like me who come from a community movement from winning in the election.
And just out on the streets in Goldstein, it seems like there's young people who like the idea of an independent in a once safe seat.
Particularly in this area, as it's been in sort of a traditional Liberal area, I feel like there's not been a lot of pressure to campaign and try to justify to voters why they need to really demonstrate value to this area.
I think it's really important to allow more independent candidates into Parliament.
That's okay. That was just the dog. He's very enthusiastic.
Sure is.
Who's Banjo voting for?
Oh, we don't know just yet. He's a little bit too young. But I think it's really important to have independent representation in Parliament to hold the major parties accountable. And I think it will help floor a lot of issues that they would otherwise gloss over.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
Joe Lauder with that story. Someone says, I'm a McKellar resident. Dr. Sophie Scamps has won my vote off the Liberals, but I'll probably still vote Liberal for the Senate. That's interesting. Well, let's talk more about the independents now. I know it's something that you're interested in, you're asking about. No better person to fill you in than Hack's political reporter, Claudia Long. Claude, mid-campaign vibe check. How you doing?
Oh, look, a bit better since I'm back from having COVID. I'm back, you know, I'm back in the game. I'm off the bench.
Hey.
It's good to be talking politics.
It's good to have you back. It's pretty hard to get elected as an independent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It can be a real, I guess, uphill battle is a bit of a cliche, but in a lot of ways that's really what it is, because I think you don't have the support of the infrastructure that the big parties have and even the minor parties, right? Because that's things like not only the experience of having run really big coordinated campaigns before for numerous elections, but you've also got pretty massive financial resources at your disposal, lots of people, a bit of data as well. So it is actually really hard to be a successful independent, but not impossible as well. And there's often a bit of a formula, right, that I think happens when independents get elected. And it seems to be when there's a fairly polarising local member who's been in the seat for a pretty long time and a well-known independent is running a strong community campaign against them. So we've seen some really good examples of that in the past few years, I reckon, like when Cathy McGowan in the Victorian seat of Indi beat Sophie Mirabella, who was a, you know, senior Liberal minister, who was fairly polarising because she's quite conservative, and, you know, her community said they felt like they'd been forgotten by her. Or like Karen Phelps when she was the independent that won in Wentworth, who, you know, basically the community seemed to be sending a message about how former Liberal Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull was dumped. So, you know, these really polarising issues that really get people out voting, passionate about who their local member is.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We're hearing from the Coalition quite a bit in recent days, and the government's main criticism of this group is that they're not actually independent, right?
Yeah, that's right. So you heard a little bit of it from Tim Wilson there and Joe's pack. And, you know, he kind of said, hey, are these guys really independent? Now, I think it is really important to note they are independents. We are seeing independents running at this election. Now, some of them do identify as being part of a more coordinated movement of independents, but it's important to note they're not all running, I guess, one big campaign, a big shared platform like you might see from Liberal, Labor, the Nationals or the Greens. It's a bit more grassroots than that. But at the same time, they're kind of in this, I guess, middle space, right? Because they're using a lot of the same imagery, you know, teal, so much teal everywhere, and really pinpointing a lot of the same issues to, you know, backing each other up on climate change, on an integrity commission. They're all gunning for the balance of power, which would give them this really significant deciding vote in Parliament. So while they're not running a centralised party campaign, in many ways, you know, they are unified on those things. And it's also really important to note, and we heard a bit of it in that story before, that a lot of them are being backed in part by the same financial backer. That's a group called Climate 200. And it's put together by millionaire investor and climate philanthropist Simon Holmes-A-Court to back independents, because that group is providing, I guess, you know, pretty significant financial backing to a number of the independents, prioritising, as you could probably guess by the name of the group,
the climate change action. Definitely. Hack political reporter Claudia Long, thank you so much for the update.
Hack on Triple J.
And that's all we've got time for on the Hack podcast for now. I'll catch you next time.